This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, the U.S. House approves a ban on flag burning, Mexicans in the U.S. can vote in Mexico's presidential elections, and the Confederate flag shows up in the Dukes of Hazzard movie. Joining us from New York is E.R. Shipp, a columnist at the New York Daily News. At NPR Washington, Jeffrey Johnson, host and producer of the Cousin Jeff Chronicles on BET, and at member station WCLK in Atlanta, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Thanks for joining us, and let me just jump right in here. So we've got a constitutional amendment to outlaw flag burning recently passed in the House of Representatives. The House passed the measure, or one like it, five times in recent years. It faces an uphill battle in the Senate. We asked some Los Angeles residents their opinion.
My name is Frank Gorgi. I'm from Santa Monica, California. I think that freedom of speech should be protected, and I don't think that burning the flag actually hurts anybody. On the other hand, I agree with what I guess the Elks Lodge and all these other organizations are saying, that it's a representative of the sacrifice a lot of people, veterans, for example, have made, and it's just unnecessarily disrespectful.
My name is Sarah Anguiano, and I'm from Mesa, Arizona. And I don't necessarily believe that it should be illegal. I just believe it's pretty much wrong, and people should have respect for where you come from and what's done for you to live here.
Hi, my name is Marwan Omar. I'm an Ethiopian living in America. And about the question burning the American flag, I would think if it was concerning aggression, or if it was a sign of like showing your anger towards another country, I would say it's okay. Go ahead and express it the way you know how. I think it's the most ultimate way to express your feelings about it, you know?
Now, ER, should Americans have the right to burn the flag, or should we protect this as a symbol of our country? And why now? Why is this issue coming up now in American politics when we have so much on our plate nationally and internationally?
It's coming up now for a very obvious reason. We're a very divided country politically, and we're in the midst of a war that is losing its popularity, and people feel very strongly about coming up with activities, symbols, what have you, to show some kind of support for the troops. It's come up before, as you said in your opening comment, and it's not unlike a number of other very emotional issues that periodically politicians decide to score brownie points by proposing an amendment to the U.S. Constitution or even to state constitutions. I don't think that this will succeed, but some reports say that it could be close in the Senate, again, because of how divided it is.
Now, Jeff, there is a congressman based in Alabama named Artur Davis. He stepped up in a state that generally is fairly socially conservative and said even though he finds flag burning odious, he thinks that it's an approved form of speech. Not every congressperson is going to step up and make that distinction between what they personally find offensive and what should be illegal. How do you think that this is playing out in American politics?
Well, clearly, I think as ER stated, we're in a very difficult time, and elected officials are concerned in many cases with one thing, and that's getting reelected. And so in certain instances, they're clearly not going to differentiate between the two. I think we're in a place where we have to lift up and support the Constitution, and we have to be able to be clear in understanding that free speech and expression is important. I don't think that there is an issue. I am for flag burning if it's an expression. I think that we should love the country that we're in. I think we should be patriotic, but oftentimes the greatest patriots are those that challenge the system. And I think that this is a mechanism of doing just that.
George, what do you think about all this?
Well, first of all, I think Congressman Davis was courageous to even make that statement when he didn't have to. Secondly, the First Amendment was drafted in part to protect unpopular speech and activities. This is quite unpopular, as it should be, but still is an expression of free speech, and the Supreme Court ruled that in 1989.
It's dangerous to open up the Constitution for amendments, and I think we see through history that one body or the other has come to its senses in time to step back and say maybe there's another way to address the issue we're trying to address without all the time trying to run and change the Constitution with another amendment. Some things I think were wrongly left out of the Constitution.
I think deliberately our founding fathers made it difficult. I mean, in order to amend the Constitution, you must have 2/3 of both the House and the Senate, and then have 38 states ratified within a 7-year period.
Right.
That's extremely difficult to do, and that's why I don't see this going anywhere.
All right. Well, I actually want to turn to two international issues. One of them is Mexico's Congress, which recently approved letting citizens outside of the country vote by mail. Most of the citizens outside of Mexico live in the U.S., and people in the U.S. have been heavily lobbying for this kind of change. Now, some skeptics say there's going to be fraud, the ballots are going to be lost either by accident or intentionally. Jeff, what do you think is going to be the impact of people in the U.S. who are accustomed to the U.S. standard of living, who have a different perspective from living internationally, participating in Mexico's elections?
Well, I think it's going to be varied. I mean, clearly there are those of Mexican descent that are U.S. citizens that are here that have varying perspectives of what's going on within their home country. And so I don't think we can paint a broad brush. I think clearly the real issue is the process that is used. And how is this going to be, how are the checks and balances going to be ensured? I mean, clearly we saw similar things happen in Iraq, where there was opportunities made for those Iraqis outside of Iraq to vote in the elections. And so I think the real question is, what is the process? Are the checks and balances going to be in place? Is there going to be a level of integrity for those elections? Are the best interests of the country going to be represented through that process?
But that's always going to be a question, don't you think? In the part of New York City where I reside, Dominicans are able to vote in the home country. And in fact, there are huge presidential campaign parades, rallies, every cycle that are right outside of my door sometimes. And people participate. In many cases, they're still involved in home politics and culture through their economic contributions. I don't foresee this being any more problematic than holding an election in Florida.
Well, ER, let me follow up with that, though. You're living in New York City, seeing Dominican citizens voting in Dominican elections, being campaigned to as Dominicans. Does this hurt the ability of groups from different nations, particularly Latin nations, to seem American?
In many cases, they have complicated answers to that. In some cases, they're here illegally. And they are working. They are, in many cases, paying various taxes. But they can't really participate fully in the U.S. electoral process. They can't participate back home. And in some cases, they decide they do want to participate in this system. But I see no reason to deny them or anyone else the opportunity to vote back home. Now, what I see, as Jeff was pointing to, is this is an issue of the process. As we've seen with how to count ballots of American citizens abroad when they mail their ballots in, it's no more complicated an issue than that. If the problem is the mail system, fix the mail system. If the problem is corruption, address the corruption. But give people an opportunity to participate.
George, I'm going to have to turn you to another topic. So many. Two polls on the genocide in Darfur, Sudan. One shows that African nations want the U.N. to intervene. Another finds that Americans also favor U.N. intervention. More than half are also willing to send U.S. troops. Now, the U.N. has not been very popular in the U.S., yet Americans seem committed to starting to recognize that something is going on in this African nation. Do you believe that there's going to be any change, any movement, which there has not been so far?
Well, so far, you're right. There hasn't been any. And the United States likes the U.N. when it's convenient for them to like the U.N. In this case, and this poll shows universally around the world, and certainly among Africans, that people favor U.N. troops. But not far behind, they also favor involvement of the African Union. And so I think it really speaks to the silence of the United Nations. We have this disaster going on, and in fact, a genocide, and it has not moved in effectively, and I think that's crying out just for that move right now.
The Secretary General, though, has been outspoken about this.
Yes, he has.
He's visited the area. I think he's trying to do or to settle this through diplomatic means, and he knows he doesn't really quite have the commitment of the member states of the United Nations to commit troops.
Now, Jeff, are you surprised that people in the United States are willing to send U.S. troops, at least on paper, at least in theory, given that people are really rolling back their support for the war in Iraq?
I don't think that people in the U.S., and this may be an overstatement, but this is where I am, I don't think they clearly have an understanding of what's taking place. And when we begin to talk about U.S. presence in other places, I think some folks are so interested in being out of Iraq that they'd be more willing to be anywhere else.
But
I think
you know what the other issue would be, I think if people are saying United Nations should become more involved, they're not necessarily thinking it's going to be American troops.
But the question was about U.S. troops. And so I think the issue, again,
going to be leading.
All right, Jeff first, then ER, back to you.
I don't disagree with ER as it relates to UN troops, but the question was about U.S. troops. And so I think that we're in a situation where I think that some of these world leaders, heads of state, need to begin to be more aggressive. I know that they may be wishful thinking. But there has to be a commitment on behalf of some world leaders to really begin to address this as genocide, to take it seriously. And whether it's the UN or whether it's the U.S., someone needs to begin to commit, I think, the resources to ensure that we can see the tide turn in this situation.
ER, what's going
to
make that
happen?
I'm
going to go back to the original question. I don't think America is equated to. And whereas there's widespread disapproval of Iraq, and the president's ratings have gone down, that people see this as quite different.
What do you mean, George?
Well, in a sense, here you have a clear genocide. In terms of Iraq, we created a reason for going there. It was a preemptive, and they're nowhere near similar.
If the UN or the U.S. were to have thought seriously of intervening, it occurred to me it should have been around the time that the movie Hotel Rwanda was getting so much play, because that was about a genocidal episode that the world ignored, and thousands, if not a million or more people, were killed. And one would have thought we would have learned a lesson from that, and that the movie might have reminded average Americans of what was at stake. But I haven't really seen that kind of groundswell or even connection.
But ER, do you think that public policy should be shaped by films? I mean, I know that they are influential, but it seems kind of strange and maybe sad that we can only pay attention to what's going on in the world if we've got actors depicting it.
Well, that is sad, but it's true. Think about some of the major issues that come up. When Mississippi Burning came out, people started really thinking again about what it really occurred in the 1960s in Mississippi and elsewhere. That same movie was mentioned when someone was convicted finally of manslaughter in the killing of three civil rights workers just recently.
Well, and I think the bigger issue, too, is not so much it affecting public policy, but we all know that the media has constantly affected public opinion, which can begin to push toward the creation of public policy. And so I think what ER is saying is that where's the groundswell of concern from average American citizens that are pushing their representatives to make this an issue?
Right.
And that the media should be sometimes that catalyst for that groundswell, and not just Hotel Rwanda, but sometimes in September, which I think more people may have seen than Hotel Rwanda, and in my opinion may have been even a better depiction. But at the end of the day, where is the groundswell of concern, whether it's from the African-American community or the broader U.S. citizenry, that are pushing their representatives to make this an issue on the national stage? And we're just not seeing that.
Before I let you guys go, I want to turn to something else film-related. You've got the TV show Dukes of Hazzard resuscitated as a new movie starring singer Jessica Simpson. The real star of the show, though, is the souped-up car, which, in the television show, sported a big Confederate flag on the roof. Well, so does the car in the movie. A poll by Atlanta-based Turner South found 76% of respondents favored leaving the flag on top of the car for the remake. George, you're in Atlanta. Are you surprised by this? Do you think it's appropriate to depict the Confederate flag as this kind of happy, good time symbol in a movie that's coming out in 2005?
I'm not surprised by it, but I don't think it's appropriate. But, I grew up in Alabama, and I'm here in Georgia, and the South, in many ways, is still fighting a civil war. They want to say that, even in this movie, that the South is not depicted correctly, but at the same time, they want to keep the rebel flag, and you can't have it both ways. So I'm not the least bit surprised by it.
It's not a symbol of the, traditionally a symbol of the South. It's something that really came into being to protest Brown versus Board of Education in the 1950s and all of that. But what I wanted to say is I never saw the Dukes of Hazzard on television. I can't even imagine going to see it as a movie. But having said that, I was impressed that according to one poll, 50% of people said that Dukes of Hazzard and the kind of characters they have don't really reflect Southern culture. I think more reflective of Southern culture is something that recently happened. A black woman was sworn in as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Georgia. Now, that's the beginning of the newest version of the New South. So forget Dukes of Hazzard, is my opinion.
All right, Jeff, you get the last word.
I think it's already been said.
All right. In New York, E.R. Shipp, a columnist at the New York Daily News. In Washington, Jeffrey Johnson, host and producer of the Cousin Jeff Chronicles on BET. And in Atlanta, George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming
up, a look at the way Southern home cooking kept the civil rights movement going.